Hello, Flockers! Thank you so much for listening. And on today's podcast, we tried something a little bit different. We were streaming the podcast live on Twitter and on Facebook. Unfortunately, it was a great experience, but the audio was affected by some lagging issues that we had during the stream. It's still very listenable. I've done what I can here on the editing side to make it even better. Lots of great duck tent for you Flockers to listen to. So as always, thank you so much for listening.
So fantastic, better not catch you lacking. Back to back like traffic, got that jumper patent in my starter jacket.
Hello and welcome to the Flock Pod. We are at hashtag 139 here in beautiful Chopper Base that you can actually see today. You can actually see Chopper Base. What a joy. The Avateria producers are sleeping away out in the living room. Hopefully they stay that way for the entirety of the podcast, but we shall see what happens. If you'd please be so kind to go find us on all of your major podcast streaming platforms at the Flock Pod. Make sure to give us that 5-star review. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get that fresh flockness in your feed every week. Also, if you please be so kind to go find us on all of those major social media platforms at the Flock Pod, make sure you're following along. Maybe hit that retweet button every once in a while to help out us in that gnarly algorithm. You can find me at Coach Justin D on those same social media platforms. Shane, tell them where you are.
You can find me at Bartender Shane 6 on Twitter and at Waka Flocka Shane 6 on the old Instagram.
And as you can see, we are down a Duck Migo today. Our third Duck Migo in crime, Mr. Duckswire himself, has actually started his own podcast. So make sure to go check that out. All the duck podcast out there, Rising Tide Lifts All the Ships. We love to see it. Scoin' Long, I believe, is the name of that pod. So make sure to go check that out. And of course, for all of your duck news, check out duckswire.usatoday.com. Shane, we have a megapod today because we missed last week. We kind of took the week off, recalibrate a little bit, try to get this stream thing set up, get things rocking and rolling. And the news cycle did not stop. So we have a lot to get through. So instead of me doing what I usually do and kind of go through the rundown, we're just going to get started. We're just going to jump right into it. And the first news we are going to talk about today is probably the most, you know, pressing news in the duck community right now is our schedule is out, baby. Our schedule is out. I think we've got, let me see, I've got the countdown right here on the old phone. 227 days until Portland State comes into Autzen Stadium on September 2nd. Make sure to go check out the full schedule in the show notes here if you'd like to. But Shane, as you look at this schedule, what immediately jumps out to you, or does anything immediately jump out to you?
First thing that jumped out at me was I went and looked at where Washington was going to fit in the schedule. And I was pretty excited to see that not only do we get a bye before that matchup, but they also do as well. So it's going to be a no excuses matchup. That was the first thing that I kind of looked at. And, you know, there's more than just Washington as the teams that we're looking at on the schedule now. Colorado with primetime, you know, USC, Oregon State, and all those schools, Utah, of course. And the cool thing about the schedule is it's kind of set up with a juggernaut team and what we consider not to be a juggernaut team in between each game. I mean, mm-hmm. We got Hawaii before Colorado. Then after that, you got Stanford and a bye, and then going into Washington. Like I said, we got Washington State before Utah, Cal before USC, and Arizona State before Oregon State. So it's set up nicely for Oregon, I think, this upcoming year.
I agree. I think the schedule, it looks like the Pac-12 almost knows what they're doing a little bit when a schedule like this comes out.
Well, we haven't seen kickoff times yet.
Yeah, that's also true. Let's not get ahead of ourselves there. I wanted to ask you, though, this is totally off topic. Did you see that video of the Colorado coach like drill sergeanting the whole team?
I watched it this morning. Boy, was that bizarre.
What the hell, man? Like, yeah. You actually, like, Dion can maybe get away with that, but I don't. That's just not how we coach in 2023, baby. Like, that's just weird.
Is that the message that you want sending out there too? Is like that's what you want parents to see, is that you're running like a military style football program. I guess, you know, you're directing that towards a very specific type of person. But boy, it was just, it looked weird too. Like the players didn't exactly know what to do.
No.
Some of their reactions were kind of weird. They're kind of looking around like, wait, really? And then it got like really serious and then a very drill sergeant-y.
Yeah. Well, and I saw a couple players tweeted out, you know, a couple professional players and then even a couple other college players from other programs and say, as soon as those kids walk out of that meeting room, they are relentlessly mocking that coach that just put them through, like just roasting them like crazy.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you're creating, and I mean, I adapted this coaching style for team specifically too. Sometimes you do almost want to create this like team against the coach kind of mentality, because it can bring your team together as long as you're the right kind of coach to be able to do that.
Led Tasso.
Yeah. But it's unique to be able to pull that off, especially when you're a new coach in that regard. So, well, you know,
and you juxtapose that to when Dion came and, you know, he gave that I'm bringing my
absolutely
own luggage and his Louis Vuitton speech, in which he played music while he waited in the hallway as if he was like a wrestler, like entering like WrestleMania. So it's weird to kind of juxtapose this, you know, this prime time big LA style kind of like coaching philosophy with this like drill sergeant bit. Absolutely. And I don't know if it's like a bit of an overcorrection that like, oh, maybe like the perception is that things were a little bit loosey goosey here, so we're gonna like put this video out and make sure that people know that we're like, we mean business and
right,
we're here to win the Pac-12.
Well, and yeah, I've got all kinds of questions about it, to be frank, but let's move on. We've dilly-dallied long enough, I think, on this topic. Let's go ahead and jump forward to talk more about the schedule again. I think the biggest game on that schedule for me, just as a fan, not even thinking about it like, oh, what's going to be critical and, you know, some kind of a CFP race or something like that. But that Washington game that you said, not only is it in the middle of the season, but it's again on the road. And so how can this team bounce back and take this rivalry game to another level? Because it's time. I mean, Washington has shown that they're no rollovers up there. You know what I mean? You're not going to be able to get them to sit and stay and things of that nature. You're actually going to have to go in there and fight.
I like it.
Right. Yeah. I thought it just kind of slipped out. The rollover one didn't get you, but I got you I got you on the next one. That Washington game is big. And again, how Lanning approaches that, how the rest of this, you know, staff approaches that. We've got a new member to the coaching staff. We'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, I think that Washington game is the game that if just as a fan that I'm taking and I'm circling with a Sharpie. Is that the same for you, or do you have a different answer?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just the way that last year went, and I think it was kind of Dan Lanning's real introduction to the Pac-12 and what these rivalries look like. And I think that some of those people who, you know, come up coaching in the South, they don't credit what, you know, how ugly some of these rivalries can get, and chippy, and just, you know, how the fans can be. And I, you know, Dan Lanning uses social media to his advantage with recruiting and everything. And you know that he sees some of the negative things that are said about him at that same time. It's impossible to use social media only for one thing. You're going to catch some of the recourse from it as well. And I think that's when he realized how much that rivalry actually means to the school and like the people who called last season a failure, even though, you know, it was a 10-win season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's go ahead and pivot here a little bit. We're going to stay on football. It's a football heavy pod here at the beginning.
Even though there's a lot of great stuff going on in basketball.
We'll get there. Like I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get there. This is a megapod, baby. You better be ready. Megapod. All right. Evan Williams, Fresno State safety, younger brother of Bennett Williams, commits to the University of Oregon Ducks, comes in, looks, I couldn't quite, this was hard for me to figure out. It looks like he's got 1 year of eligibility left, maybe two.
I feel like everybody has two. Kay McCormick still has two.
It's so hard to figure out. Yeah. Steve Stevens coming. We'll get to him later too. But, and then also Jordan Birch, South Carolina defensive lineman, commits to the Ducks. I believe he has 2 years of eligibility left. So in your opinion, when we look at those two transfers coming in now for the Ducks, which one is the more impact player next year?
I think based on the reaction I've seen from their fan bases, I'd say it was Evan Williams. I feel like a lot of just judging before I even watched a second of him play, but just the reaction from their fan base on Twitter, they just kind of said that like, man, if like this didn't break this way or that didn't break that way with injuries and whatnot, that we'd be talking about this guy going to the NFL and representing Fresno State in the NFL draft. now he's going to be wearing this other uniform before he goes into the draft. So I would say Evan Williams based on that. And then, of course, I'm very impartial to Evan Williams. He, when I found out that his name was Evan Williams, I immediately became a giant fan. And now I'm rooting for him just as hard as anybody else. For those who know me and have known me for a while, they know my drink of choice when I didn't have a lot of money was Evan Williams. Living across the street from that liquor store right when I turned 21, it was dangerous.
Brutal. Yeah, that can be rough. Well, hopefully we'll get some better memories from Evan Williams this time.
I had a lot around. Of good and bad. And a lot of just none of the above.
You know, I was surprised to not find much like cut up highlight film of either of these guys. Jordan Birch actually had more, was easier to watch. I mean, Evan Williams had me watching like full Fresno State games, you know, trying to figure out what this guy can do, but he really flies to the ball. It's really impressive the way he flies to the ball. And then when he gets there, he's like, it's like, you know, flying it. He's stuck. He's not going anywhere. He very, very seldomly saw him miss a tackle once he actually got there. So I think he's a big time addition to that secondary that also got two more returners. We've got Steve Stevens and Jamal Hill, both returning for the Oregon Ducks. And I think Oregon fans were kind of freaking out about it. Oh, we don't want him to come back. It's depth. I don't think we're going to be relying on Steve Stevens as a starter next year. Pray to the heavens that that is not the situation. But it's still important to have guys come back and want to come back that have been involved in the program and that want to keep going with the program and see themselves, you know, even if they're not to the level that a lot of Duck fans want them to be, still improving and still getting better. And I think that's a culture that you want to have set. So of those two players, do you think either Stevens or Hill will make a big impact next year? Or do you kind of agree with me where you see them more as depth?
It's depth. And I think it's adults in the locker room, and you're keeping around a couple pieces from last year's team who got a sniff of the playoffs and a little bit of that taste. And I think that that's going to help the people around them. And a lot of these newcomers keep that fire lit under their ass. And I think they need a lot of these guys who can remind them of last year's downfalls. And, you know, like just have that inspiration piece. And we live right now in this time of like immediate result success. And we forget sometimes that it takes a little bit of time for these guys to gel. And some of these incoming freshmen and stuff, like we talk about them, like, you know, who could be the biggest impact immediately. But sometimes we might not see him for a year or two. And I think that's what happens with these really good programs. I mean, you see it with, you know, these huge star players, but how many times is Georgia and Alabama just reloading with these guys who are just on the cusp of playing, or, you know, having guys go into the draft that are barely playing at the
exactly.
time? So
yep.
I think that this move builds some of that. You know, it's odd because we think of it as, you know, last year's biggest failure for this team was probably the secondary. So it's like, oh, let's get those guys out the door. But no, we still got good individual pieces there. And even if they don't play, I mean, just having them at practice or whatever. But I mean, they're obviously sold something that they feel like they're going to make an impact. So, you know, maybe in that locker room, they don't see those two as being, you know, the problem that was last year.
Well, and again, I think what you mentioned is really important. The adults in the room, you know, guys that are going to get in the weight room and push those younger guys that are going to show those transfers the Oregon way and, you know, how to get things done in that regard. So I think that is really important. Another Oregon Duck returning kicker, Camden Lewis, coming back big time. You know, I'm sorry, Cam, I know you're listening, but I just want you to listen for a second. I'm struggling, man. I like Camden Lewis. He's great, but I need more swag. I need more vibes. I need more of that, just that energy. You know what I mean? But yeah, great kicker, accurate kicker, has an opportunity now to kind of mentor, you know, the best kicker that's coming in the country next year in that recruiting class. This is great. I think this is big time for the Ducks.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's huge just to not have that freshman kicker go out there and immediately, you know, be like thrown to the fire too.
Yes.
Somebody to mentor, he'll probably, you know, redshirt because why not? But I mean, it's always, you're always fearful with the kicker. He gets into a new situation, new stadium, those vibes can be all different. Misses one kick in your whole career. Cause that's the thing with kickers. It's like golf or like something where just like one bad day can kind of like change the course of your career. Like who knows with this like Cowboys kicker, what the rest of his career is going to look like after
totally.
That.
But yeah, big time to have some consistency. And I think in a time where there's so much turnover and these programs are almost flipped upside down every single year, I think anybody coming back is going to be a big thing. We also didn't mention this, but Brandon Dorlus and Casey Rogers also committed to coming back. We haven't had a chance to pod since they, you know, announced they're returning. So that defensive line room is going to be very full. But we've also got what sounds like a great group of leaders coming back to keep this thing moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, Casey Rogers, the way he was really coming on at the end of last season too. It's cool to see him come back and carry and some Dorlus? Of that momentum.
What the hell? I mean, I'm happy. Okay, let me ask you this question. If you could pick, would you rather have Dorlus coming back or Sewell coming back?
Man, that's a good question. I'm going to say Dorlus coming back just because I really like what we have with Keith Brown. And I'm okay with him getting those reps alongside Jeff Bassa. And just some of that. I also think that Lanning can get really creative with how he uses like down linemen, edge rushers in as the linebackers and kind of like maneuvering guys around. And I kind of think that having more versatility is going to benefit the team moving into next year.
Well, and that Iowa linebacker that's transferring in, Justin Jacobs, I think also makes that decision a little bit easier for me. And if you could say one thing that Oregon team needed to do a better job of last year, it was putting pressure on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so if we can bring an experienced guy back, probably our best pass rusher.
Yeah, I'd like to just see him get paired with a little more speed on the edge, just because I think he's so physical on the inside and he demands those double teams. And it was just the other guys around him just not really getting to the quarterback. And yeah, I think that lack of pass rush really made that secondary look bad last year. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they caught a lot of shit for. But, you know, if that quarterback is getting put in a little more pressure, sometimes when they're jumping on those routes, those are interceptions instead of like pass balls.
Well, and how long can you honestly expect your secondary to keep up coverage?
Shit's 4 seconds, hard, dude.
4 seconds, 5 seconds. I mean, that's anything over 4.5, 5 seconds. I mean, you need that pass rush to get there. So
pass rush,
pass rush in there to get there.
Especially with all the quarterbacks in the Pac-12.
Too. Oh my gosh. I mean,
you're talking about like elite level quarterback play and like probably what, 7 NFL players playing Pac-12 last year.
Penix. Well, I'm talking, if we're looking at next year.
You're calling him Penix now.
Yeah, right? I'm leaning into it. Yeah, I'm leaning into it. We got Penix. We got Nix. We got Uwe Ungalale. We got Caleb Williams.
The kid Stanford, probably.
Oh, yeah. What's his?
I don't know. Generic Stanford quarterback.
I can't remember his last name now. Yeah, so that's 5. Delora? Jane Delora?
NFL, probably not. XFL,
CFL,
though.
CFL, XFL, maybe. Yeah. But I mean, it's, I think it was Jeff Schwartz that tweeted out this morning after looking at the schedule. And he just said, you know, whatever team in the Pac-12 has the best defense is going to win the Pac-12 because a lot of the offenses are incredible. I mean, there is a lot of talent. Oh, the Sanders kid, Deion Sanders kid at Colorado too. He's probably got a little legit future. Well, speaking of that defense, Oregon brings in a new safeties coach, Coach Chris Hampton from Tulane, the good old green wave. That green wave rolls right over here to Oregon. He just has to just change the shade of that green. He's been coaching since 2008, began as a graduate assistant at Arkansas State, again, was most recently at Tulane, did a pretty good job with their defense here the last couple of years. I didn't know a whole lot about this guy, this awesome website, duckswire.usatoday.com, and read a little bit about him just to kind of get a feel. I guess he was a safety at South Carolina when he was there. Do you know anything about this? Did you watch a lot of Tulane last year? I have no idea what can you expect.
No, I had during like quarantine when I was playing NCAA football, like 2002 or something a lot. I started a dynasty with Tulane. I was like, oh, there's New Orleans. I kind of like their jerseys. I just want to like overhaul a roster.
I love it.
So that's my relationship with Tulane.
San Jose State was always my team to do that with, just because the colors, man, that yellow and that light blue and that mask, that Aztec logo, it was so sick. But yeah, apparently he's already out there on the recruiting trail, hasn't even completely, you know, hasn't officially been hired, I guess. So hopefully he doesn't get himself in any trouble there. But he is already out there trying to help Oregon bring in some of those big time recruits. And a couple of those possible recruits, these guys are actually transfers. Dan Lanning already has a little bit of connection with both these players. Jaheim Singletary, cornerback, and MJ Shepherd, linebacker. Again, both from Georgia. both played at Georgia, but kind of sparingly, kind of like those players we were mentioning earlier that just never really got that opportunity to shine. Both players are being recruited, you know, by other big schools, Ohio State, Tennessee, those types of schools are going after them. What kind of a, I mean, you're a betting man, Shane. What kind of odds would you give Oregon to land either of these two guys?
Man, in this day and age, that's so hard to say. You know what I mean? this whole, like, it's really, I've almost made like to almost not even try and follow some of this stuff right now. I'm just going to let it totally. Like when the chips fall, I'll figure out where they are. You know what I mean?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd say 10%, you know, maybe a 10% chance we land one of these guys just because of the amount of other schools that are going after them and the pedigree that they both bring, both five-star guys, going to be very, very highly sought after. The Ducks did land a commit here in this last week, a kid that actually plays football literally right here in my front yard, Sheldon High School quarterback Brock Thomas, a three-star, 6 foot, 165. Somebody get that kid a sandwich. Quarterback led the Sheldon Irish to 12-1 last year. They ended up losing in the state title to West Lynn. I watched a little bit of film on this kid. It's so funny because I kept wanting to go to a Sheldon High School football game, and then Miga and I just never made it over there to watch. Just watching his film and watching some of his Elite 11 stuff, decent arm. You know, I don't know what his future is, but I mean, I think it's a good depth piece. I think it's always good to bring in, you know, local kids, but I don't see this being a Justin Herbert situation at 6 foot, 165.
Right. And I mean, Herbert was just a different style athlete too. I mean, with just the frame absolutely. And everything that you're mentioning, like it's one of those
this
things.
Kid, I was just saying this kid moves pretty well. I mean, I actually said maybe he's a future wide receiver because his footwork is good. He's got good three cone, things of that nature. We've seen, you know, a couple quarterbacks make that transition, but yeah, I mean, it's good depth if nothing else.
Yeah, and it's always good to see a hometown kid. I mean, I'm sure it's a dream come true situation for him to put on, you know, the Oregon jersey, be in Autzen Stadium, maybe transfer out, go somewhere, but he has a better chance to play in a couple years. But kind of some gains experience and get going, bring some of that D1 experience to a lower level school if that's his future, or shocks us all, earns a scholarship, becomes a player one day.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah, it sounds like he's
happens all the time.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Looks like he's getting a preferred walk-on spot right now. So yeah, hopefully he's able to come in and put in the work and earn that scholarship. One kid that Dan Lanning desperately wants to give a scholarship to and desperately wants him to sign it is 2023 five-star athlete target. I believe it's Nicholls Harbor. I haven't heard it pronounced any differently, but I believe it's Nicholls Harbor. He's a 6'5", 225-pound athlete. Again, projected at tight end, defensive end. It's also a kid who wants to run track, coming out of the Washington, D.C. area. Have you had a chance to look at any of this kid's film?
No, just kind of seen some of the rumblings on him. Any tight end, D, run, I'm all that style of athlete coming to Eugene.
Yeah, this kid's fast. I mean, this kid has like unheard of kind of crazy athleticism, like DK Metcalf kind of athleticism. So it'll be really interesting to see. It looks like Dan Lanning's going out to do the in-home visit, and then he is coming to Eugene here at the end of the month. A couple other big-time recruits that have been in town over the last few weeks. We've got a bunch of 2024 targets here. Let's see, linebacker Braden Platt and running back Jason Brown visited last weekend, it looks like. And then coming up here for junior weekend, if you want to look at the full list, you can always go to duckswire.usatoday.com. Check out the full list, everybody coming in here for junior weekend. But some of these standouts, quarterback Michael Van Buren, defensive lineman Nigel Smith, offensive tackle Fox Crater, just a great name. Cornerback Andre Gibson. I haven't had a chance to look at a lot of these guys' films. I looked at Fox just a little bit because he's actually already committed to the Ducks. But just good to keep tabs on these kids. Good to, you know, have some water cooler conversations. You know, if you hear a name kind of come through the woodwork there. The recruiting world is just so crazy right now. So we never want to get, it's like speed dating. You can't get too attached. You know, it's like you have your little moment with them, you know, you bring them in for the visit. And then if they come back to you at the end of the thing and say they want to commit, it's like, okay, you're committed, but let's wait. Let's wait till, you know, the national signing day and we'll actually see if we put on that Duck uniform or not. And speaking of which, staying in the recruiting world, we've got 2025 wide receiver Dallas Wilson, who commits to Oregon. And I just put in the notes for now. We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right.
I don't know. It's always when they commit that early. It's like, yeah, dude, you're 16.
Exactly. He did pick the Ducks over other schools like Alabama and such. So it's always nice. It's still surreal to me, man, as a Duck fan, to be out there competing for five stars against schools like Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Ohio State. You know, I'm just grateful. Just grateful to be a Duck fan. Grateful for the situation this program is in right now, for sure. We are going to take a look now at the NFL playoff picture, because my goodness, was it an incredible NFL playoffs weekend. Shane, what was, just as we just kind of zoom out and just look at the playoffs? I mean, we're going to focus in on some pro Ducks here and kind of talk about them a little bit more. But did you have a moment from this weekend that was just like your favorite moment? Because I imagine you were probably rocking the bar, so you were watching all the games there, but what did you see this weekend that was your favorite thing from the playoffs?
Oh man, favorite thing from the playoffs. That's a good question. Kayvon getting shine. I know we're going to talk about, I got to watch the most of was that Giants Vikings game. Won some money on that one, but I'd say my favorite moment was the Bengals pulling one out of their ass. Although I do have my preseason wager was on the Ravens to win the title this year. So it won't cost me some money potentially, but just the way that game went and, you know, pulling it out, just being so desperate and having, you know, the tides turn so quickly. That was probably my favorite moment, was that Tyler Huntley fumble scoop and score, or not even really a scoop and score. I don't even know what I really want to call it. Hey, I have the ball. Let's see how fast I can go.
That was like cookies. Like, I stole your cookies and now I'm running with your cookies to the other end zone. Like, I think my favorite thing was just watching Tom Brady get his ass kicked. I found that very, very enjoyable. I mean, it was by the Cowboys, so it's kind of a lose-lose their situation for me, because I'm definitely not a Cowboys fan. But I mean, Tom Brady legitimately looked like he didn't even want to be there. He looks like he's afraid to take a hit. He looks like a guy that's, he's like a boxer that's, you know, little, you know, dodgy and whatnot. So that was just really enjoyable. It was an absolute ass kicking, and I just really, really enjoyed that. You know who didn't enjoy the playoffs, Shane? You know who didn't enjoy the playoffs? Our guy, Justin Herbert. Because Justin balled out. I think Justin actually played pretty well. 25 of 43, 275 yards and a tutty in a incredible loss to 30-31 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Were you watching this game, I imagine, at the bar?
Yeah, I was working, and you know, I was paying attention early and was like, okay, you know, game. And it was kind of slow, and it was like we didn't have the sound on for it or anything, so I was like, let's get out of here early, you know. So we're like cleaning stuff up, and then the end of the night it got kind of busy again. I'm like, yo, this is a game. And I'm like, they're down 10, like 8 minutes left. I was like, they could actually do this. And then to watch them pull it off, it was like, and then this poor kid came in right as, you know, right as Jacksonville kicks the field goal to win. And he's looking, what? Like, yeah, I know, man. Hate to break it to you. It was like the video that, did you see that guy who was like, took a nap or whatever? And his friends like woke him up and they're like, no, the Chargers lost.
Wait, what?
Like, what? No. Like, no, yeah, they did.
Insane. No, I think in the third quarter, there's this one fantasy football group chat that I'm in. I just sent, I was like, nice season, Jags, nice season. And then I proceeded to get roasted for the rest of the game by the group chat for being the guy that called things too early. So just a brutal game. I'm just amazed that Staley still has a job. I think it's just because the Chargers are cheap and they don't want to pay another head coach. They go in and they fire the OC, they fire the quarterback coach, thinking they can put a Band-Aid over a dam. But Brandon Staley is not the guy. I mean, unless they bring in, I mean, can you even think of an offensive coordinator they could bring in that would get you excited? Somebody that could work with Herbert that you would actually be, you know, really up for?
Not a realistic one.
Not at all.
Like Bellamy, Sean Payton or, you know, it's interesting because it's like Staley was a defensive coordinator with the Rams. He comes there and then he's fired. But Trevor Lawrence, and they were just absolutely roasting them at the same time. So it's weird. I feel like firing the offensive coordinator is just kind of leaning into that, what the media is already kind of perpetuating about. It was the offensive fault that they lost that game, even though they scored 31 points. So it's like that's just the weirdest part about it, is I feel like 31 points is enough for that. I almost said San Diego defense, that Charger defense to still win that game. So no, it's weird. I mean, I can't stop saying Oakland and San Diego.
Yeah, no, it's what we were born up with, man. It totally makes sense. It's three things. It's Herbert missing that throw to Keenan Allen. You got to make that throw, Justin. Mm-hmm. That's a throw you got to make. Why the hell they're throwing the ball 43 times when you are up that much and you have Austin Eckler in your backfield? Like, what are we doing here? Like, you have a lead, run the fucking ball. If nothing else, at least like throw some quick screens or something like that. Like, for crying out loud. And then secondly, or thirdly, that defense, that Charger defense just completely took a shit on the field, and good for Trevor Lawrence. You know what I mean? I was excited because I've got Trevor Lawrence in a super flex league. And I was like, oh man, I could probably let him go now. And I could probably get him back for an even cheaper keeper price. This guy just threw 5 picks in a playoff game. No one's going to want to draft him next year. But then of course he goes and balls out. So it's like, of course that's not going to change. All right. Anything else from that game? Are you ready to move on?
Well, I think that the bigger story with Staley and why I think he should have been fired was keeping the starters in through the end of the regular season there. And then costing Mike Williams because I mean, that's the elephant in the room, is Mike Williams not being out there and that team just looking so much different with him on the field compared to without. I do think there are a couple people that they could potentially go after next year to maybe fix this problem a little bit. There's rumors that DeAndre Hopkins is going to be getting shot by the Arizona Cardinals. That would be a filthy combination, especially if you're able to hold on to Keenan Allen. If he has to be in that trade, though, who cares? Because Justin Herbert's in his life, what you're talking about, Sheldon High School, University of Oregon, or what he's been with the Chargers, he's had a receiver of that caliber that he can just throw it up to.
It's true.
And the other one would be Odell Beckham still hasn't signed with a team. I don't know if he's planning on playing this season. Is he allowed to sign with a team at this point and still play, or is he going to be somebody who's...
Yeah, it's next year. That knee's still not right for him. That's going to be next year for sure.
He would be somebody, the problems that he was able to solve within the Rams offense, even with Cooper Kupp and some of the firepower that they already had, I think that OBJ would be a great kind of like stop and go guy for Herbert, who, and you know, OBJ is the guy that we kind of a more elite to look this successful. I mean, he wasn't the same player with Baker Mayfield. So that would be a fun matchup too.
Again, though, if I'm the Chargers and I'm going through the draft and I'm looking through free agency, the only thing I'm looking at is their 40 time. Cause that team is slow. That team is slow on every level. That team is slow on offense. It's slow on defense. They need some team speed. Sign Devin Allen, for crying out loud. I mean, bring this into another duck angle. You know what I mean? Like, just get somebody out there that can run fast, because it's right now they are really, really struggling to have any kind of explosive play on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. All right, let's jump into this Giants Vikings game. Giants take it 31-24 over the fraudulent Minnesota Vikings. KT has 3 tackles, almost had a sack, got real close, got a couple good pressures. Was definitely getting a lot of love from the commentators. It's just fun to see him balling out. And just him and Herbert kind of have a similar storyline to me in regards just to the draft process and all the questions people had. I mean, different questions, but the same type of almost like character personality type questions. And for him just to go out there and to rock the outfit he did. Did you see his after game outfit, the PJs and everything? And I think it was Peter Schrager brought this up, like the audacity as an underdog to pack that kind of an outfit to wear after. No, it was Ben Solak that was saying this. The audacity to pack that kind of an outfit to wear after the game. Like, that's just, you love it. And the big like Monopoly guy hat, like, oh man. So yeah, KT, just an absolutely great game there for the Giants.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting and kind of worth noting. We haven't talked, you know, the week that KT has almost taken on this heel persona after that Indianapolis Colts game where he was doing the snow angels next to the injury. And then when asked about Jeff Saturday's criticism, said, "Who's Jeff Saturday?" which was just hilarious on multiple levels. But it was something that I was kind of thinking about, that a former Oregon player in the NFL hasn't really taken on a heel persona, or like, for people who don't watch wrestling, kind of like this bad guy of the movie kind of persona, where, you know, in the NFL, a lot of guys kind of get this light shown on them. I think you got one.
LeGarrette Blount.
That was the one. That was the only one I was going to say, but I feel like although he punched him on the field, he was kind of like a fan favorite in a lot of stops.
I think he was just a heel to me because he played for the Patriots. You know, obviously he played for other teams too, but had more success with the Patriots. So that's kind of what made him a heel, but also just his kind of his running style, just angry, just seems like kind of a bad guy from a movie. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I mean, even then, he wasn't really a big media focus either. So no, to have this this former Oregon player to have this like this person, I'm here for it. I kind of like it. I like that he's like, you know, this D end who's an up and comer who's like kind of nasty and has this edge to him and a little bit of showmanship as well.
Dude, he could be in a Marvel movie right now and be like a Marvel bad guy. Like he's definitely like locked and loaded to be able to do that. And I think just being in that New York marketplace, I'm sure his marketing team kind of went to him and said, okay, you know, like, how do you want to play this? How do you want to kind of be seen in this market? You know, what do you want to spin, you know, and that kind of a thing. And it seems like he's being genuine. He's being himself, but he's also, like you said, just leaning into it just a little bit. And I'm kind of all for it. And again, he's doing it on the field. That's the most important part.
New York,
New York mentality, no doubt.
Yeah,
we are having a little bit of lagging issues here, guys. So stay with us. This is our first time using StreamYard, so we're just giving it a try. But yeah, just stick it out with us. Stick it out with us. Let's jump to this Seattle 49er game now. Two Ducks playing in this one, both for the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners come up with a 41-23 victory over my Sky Chickens. We had Diamador, Mr. Harry Potter, Lenore with five tackles and a big-time interception. And then Eric Armstead with two tackles and a sack on good old Geno Smith. Shane, this game hurt me. I knew during the beginning of the week that the Seahawks weren't going to win. I knew it. I knew it in my head. I knew it in my heart. But you know what? Come Saturday morning, you know what I did, Shane? I convinced myself this team actually had a chance. I was like, you never know. NFC West games, you know, they always get ugly. The weather's going to be nasty. You know, Geno's going to go out there and just play his best game ever. Maybe the defense gets a pick six or something to give us a chance. And for the first half, man, it was Miga and I were going crazy here in the living room. We were loving life. And then the second half happened and reality kicked back in. And This 49ers team is scary, man. Are they your pick right now in the NFC, or who would your NFC pick be?
Oh, man. I don't know. I still have this feeling that the clock is going to strike midnight on Brock Purdy at some point. And, you know, you and I disagree on a lot of things, especially when it comes to football. But, boy, do I just resonate with everything you said about that pregame feeling where I did the exact same thing. Where I was like, I even like sent that thing to you, like I'm trying not to bet on that game.
Never
and
bet.
Later you're like, yo, throw 20 on it for me. And I don't know, I already had money on it too. I didn't know if DraftKings was gonna put it on. I got in on an 8.5. You got the 10.5.
Yeah, I was feeling great about that.
That one hurt me too. Man, the NFC. Yeah, I was too. When a game started, I was like, here we go, man. Geno's composed. K9 Kenneth Walker was looking pretty good. And, you know, things were clicking. And I was just like, oh, he's gonna have the game where he doesn't look like, you know, young Tom Brady. But that wasn't the case because of the things out there. I'd probably still go with those. I don't know. Just because of that. Just because I trust Jalen Hurts a little bit more than Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
I like him a little bit more. I have nothing against Brock Purdy, but I'm like, go figure, like, the next, like, you know, Tom Brady story is this, like, super, like, vanilla dude. Again, not rooting against him, but just a way less interesting story than Jalen Hurts. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm rooting against him because he's a Niner. I'm definitely rooting against him. I mean, I grew up a 49ers fan when they were in the NFC. You know what I mean? And now it's just like, yeah. But the 49ers could literally put out a robot at quarterback and just say, you don't have to throw the ball more than 20 yards. And that offense would still be incredibly successful because of all of those stinking weapons. And I love Christian McCaffrey. It pained me to root for him when he was at Stanford because I hate Stanford. And now it pains me even more to root for him for a 49ers. But he's one of my favorite players in the NFL. I love his story. I love that he's like a Bruce Lee fanatic. And just the way that he's overcome the odds and been this incredible running back at his size. It's a cool story. But fuck the 49ers, man. I think it's going to be the Eagles. I think a sneaky team. That Giants squad, man, that Giants squad could surprise him. Dayball is just in his bag right now, for sure. All right. I think we've dilly-dallied on this one long enough. Let's get to maybe the best performance of the weekend by an Oregon Duck, Javon Holland, keeping that Miami Dolphins team in the game with a third-string quarterback. They do lose 31-34 to the Bills. 9 tackles, big-time interception. I mean, we knew he was going to be good in the NFL, but did you think he was going to be this good?
I mean, I did. I think I was more surprised by Diamador Lenore and his success.
Yep.
Javion Hunter, says, hearing him talk about the game, just being an absolute student of the game, him and Verone McKinley. It's cool that they've both ended up on that Dolphin squad. But yeah, I mean, Holland's athleticism with how much he just lives and breathes football, I think was just like the perfect combination of player. He was somebody that when he was returning punts at Oregon, I was just petrified every single time because I didn't want him to get hurt. And I thought he was that important. I mean, I always felt like Javion Holland was a little bit undervalued. Just, I don't know what it was, a little bit because of his size or if it was because he was coming from the Pac-12 or Oregon or what it was. But this is maybe not this quickly, but this is the level of success. But Diamador Lenore, what he was able to do against DK Metcalf, I think that kind of jump has been more of a surprise for me, just because I thought he would struggle with, especially being not the biggest corner in the world and DK Metcalf being the biggest wide receiver in the world, that, you know, like that would be a poor matchup for him. But he kind of, I don't know, cost us.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a football parlance, he got in his ass. You know what I mean? He really got in his head a little bit. And in that second half in particular, DK is his worst enemy. I mean, I'm going to do it. DK versus DK is the only game that he's playing out there. He can dominate basically any cornerback in the league, but when he gets in his own head, he just becomes a different player. And you see it happen as a Seahawks fan, and it's so frustrating. But I also think that he's in the perfect situation to have a head coach like Petey Sunshine, because he's going to let DK be DK, and he's going to let him figure it out. He's still, what, 25? I mean, he's a young kid, right? He's got to figure it out. So you got to give him a chance to kind of make those mistakes, and he'll get that. He'll get those attitude issues in check, I think. And he'll get things right. One duck we did not get to see play, Anthony Brown, for the Baltimore Ravens, was looking like he might get the start. We were worried about Huntley's shoulder. I know you were really looking forward to this one, but this is the question I want to ask you. If Brown starts that game, do the Ravens win?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Ravens could have won with Huntley. You know, if that play I mentioned before didn't happen, you know, things possible with the way that they run the ball, and with that defense there, and you know, the defense did play really well. I was just so kind of looking forward to literal people's heads exploding on Twitter if Anthony Brown had more playoff. The idea of that was just so crazy to me that I was rooting to just see like the potential for it. But would that give him a better chance? Probably not.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It would have been fun though for Duck fans for sure. All right. Anything else you want to touch on from the NFL playoffs, or should we jump over to this other weird round ball? All right, let's do
round ball time.
Round ball time. Only 45 minutes into the podcast, you know, no big deal. But people love the football, Shane. People love that oblong ball. All right, men's and women's. Let's go with the men here first. It's been an up and down few weeks here for this men's squad and for Dana Altman, I think, in particular. I'd say confidently the Ducks have played 2.5 good games and about 1.5 really, really atrocious games. That ASU one is just kind of an anomaly. I mean, they shot the ball so incredibly well. I don't think the Ducks played poorly. They just lacked effort. They looked like they were getting discouraged by the way that Arizona State was playing. And that's the first time I can say a thing in a long time that it kind of reflects on Dana. You know, as a coach, you've got to be the guy getting those guys ready to go. And I think he just got frustrated, you know, but to be able to bounce back, to have that massive game against Arizona. Did you hear about the drive that Dana took after the ASU game?
I know I didn't.
So I guess he couldn't sleep the night after that. And so he just jumped on I-5, and before he knew it, he was at Roseburg. And I don't think I've ever felt closer to Dana Altman in my entire life, like just being so frustrated and discouraged and just no idea what to do, that you just got to get in your car and you just got to drive for a while. You just zone out. And I mean, that's not a great drive down I-5 to Roseburg. I actually kind of hate that drive, but I could see how it could happen for sure. But I want to read this quote too. I pulled this. Oh crap. Now I can't remember what article I pulled it from, but I'm just going to read this, and I want to get your reaction. "You're disappointed in yourself when you can't get a team to play hard," Altman said. "As a coach, that's your first responsibility. So it just drives me nuts and bothers me the most when we don't compete. We've played bad before and lost games because of our, but our competitiveness can't be what it was Thursday night or the previous Thursday against Colorado. That's just not basketball. That's not what we want. We can't have that. We can't tolerate that. That's non-negotiable. Can't have those kinds of efforts. That sounds like a pretty frustrated coach to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty frustrated human. You know what I mean? And it's been that type of season for the Ducks. It's just been, if you were to describe this season in one word, it would be frustrating because
yes,
the days when the energy was there, the shots weren't falling, the shots start to fall a little bit. The energy is not there. Just like at a certain point, it's kind of like, damn, is this why, you know, did I make the right choice coming here? Did I make a mistake coming to this team? But the light at the end of the tunnel is they're finally getting these guys back and they're finally healthy. I mean, Arizona is the first time that all these bodies were back and they've had a little bit of time to play with each other. With, you know, Cousinard, Bartholomew being transfers and, you know, Biddle being young in his career, Ware being a freshman, all these things just kind of adding up to this perfect storm. And I do think that the starting lineup getting changed for Arizona, Biddle start, I think, did kind of give them a little bit of shot of energy because what he does lack in any sort of like physical, you know, he's a long, lanky kid. I mean, I don't want to say like what he lacks in physical talent, but he's not the most athletic and he's not the strongest guy in the world, but he goes out there and he busts his ass. And then the other thing is being Cousinard being in the starting lineup, giving Will Richardson that ability to play off ball, I think kind of opens up the scoring for him a little bit. And when he's able to shoot the ball a few times, he becomes a little bit more of an unselfish passer. And he looks for those alley-oops off of the pick and roll and whatnot when he shot attempts. I think early in the year when we're seeing him shoot the ball 5-6 times an entire game, he's just not really getting into his game. So finally having those two guards, it's some of those players have taken a little bit of a step back. I felt like coming off the bench, Rigsby being one of them, where he's kind of like, whoa, 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 where do I fit into this now? But at that same time, some in that starting five, and they need to get off to these games and get some points on the board. And then we see that energy level pick up. It's what scares me about this team is also kind of a benefit, is they're just down on themselves when shit starts to go bad. And a lot of shit is just not gone their way this season. And you see them just kind of self imploding.
Yep. But I think, I mean, watching that Arizona game, I was just thinking about your prediction that this team is going to win the Pac-12 conference championship, the tournament. And I could see it now because this team can go on a run. This team does have the talent to be able to do that. And I think another key thing that I read in that article and the one talking about Dana is that Dante and Feli Dante kind of got up in front of the team and kind of gave like an impassioned speech just about how he was pissed off, and to see him then take that anger and then basically end a Arizona Wildcat player's life on the basketball court with that dunk
early.
Really, really, you know, walking it like he talks it, you know what I mean? Just getting out there and playing hard. But I think having Biddle in the starting lineup, even just as a shakeup, was an important piece for, I'm a big Biddle fan. I think the kid's got a pretty high ceiling. I think they're starting to unlock some of that more athleticism. He looks more fluid on the court this year than he has in the past. And again, just another year that he can continue to get in the weight room and add more physicality. I think he's an NBA player. I really do. I think he's got that kind of a ceiling, you know, if he sticks around for another year or two and this coaching staff can really begin to develop him, because the mistakes he's making are hustle mistakes. You can tell he's a high IQ kid. You can tell that he's trying hard, but because he's trying so hard, it does lead to some mistakes out there on the basketball floor.
Kind of like an early Drew Eubanks.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Mm-hmm. Who's somebody I didn't think would be an NBA guy, but 100% is.
I mean, his athleticism, though, at 6'8", 6'9", is what's allowing him to do that. And I think Biddle's length, that's kind of the main difference between the two players. But yeah, that's a great comp, actually. Great comp. Because Biddle will probably have to go that route, too. He'll probably be a G League guy. Probably be an undrafted free agent, that kind of a thing. Might even have to go to Europe for a little while. But I think his body is something that NBA scouts right now are just drooling over, especially with all the Wemby mania going on out there. Next game for this team is going to be tonight, actually, at Cal Berkeley at 7 p.m. And then they get Stanford Cardinal on Saturday down there at 8 p.m. I think these are an important few games. You know, I mean, you obviously to come back out, to get knocked on the mat like they did against ASU, to come back out and keep throwing punches. But now it's like the 15th round of that same bout. You know, can you bring that same energy again on the road against some teams that you really should beat? You know, what do you, if you were to, again, you're a gambling man, Shane, if you were to wager, you know, what the Ducks' record is coming out of this weekend. Do you think they go 2-0?
So I didn't catch any of that.
Oh, yeah, I lost all of that. Okay, cool. Yeah. Lagging. Awesome. Do you think this team goes 2-0 on the weekend?
I do. I think that win against Arizona, they're looking at their winning streak. And I think that they have identified what makes this team good. And against Arizona, they scored a lot of points off turnovers that they were forcing. And I think that they see that that energy is what they're going to really have to hang their hat on going forward. This team does have a lot of talent. It's just that they are going to have to be one of the harder – they're going to have to be the harder working team on the court to win. And they know that they're going to – that's how other teams are going to attack them, because these teams that were, you know, are quote-unquote bad teams or don't have this NBA talent or, you know, are – because the Pac-12 is a very competitive basketball conference. So these lower-level schools, they're looking at Oregon being like, yo, we can go and beat them on TV and people are going to notice us, and they're a beatable team.
Yep,
so, yeah, I definitely think they can win both these games. What I'm going to be looking for is just if they keep going with that same starting lineup, what some of these players are going to – what their attitudes are going to look like coming off the bench. I think Quincy Guerrier off the bench is going to be a new experience for him. And if he's able to last year as a starter off the bench, we're looking at a good team.
Might be onto something there. Yep, might be onto something there. I agree with you. I think this team goes 2-0 on the weekend, and I think Dana's finally getting this thing rolling in the right direction. All right, let's jump on over to the other side here on the women's side. 3-2 in their last five games. Losses to number 19, Arizona, and then just an absolute heartbreaking loss to the Washington State Cougars. I want to talk about that Cougar game predominantly, Shane, mainly because that's the game that I watched the most recently. But also because I think it was almost like an NBA game, the way that, I mean, each team kind of went on a big run and each team gained that separation. I'm just really impressed with this team's ability to not back down. They've got, what, 9 scholarship players right now? And there's, I mean, they're talented, obviously, but I mean, they can't even scrimmage in practice right now with the girls that they have on this roster. I think they went down, what, 8 with about 3 minutes left in that game against Washington State, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, they were down 11 with 4.5 minutes left. But yeah,
that's what it was. Something like it. Yeah, that's what it was. And so just to be able to battle back, I mean, I've been a Tahina Pau-Pau stan before she even got on campus, and she played incredibly well. But the players that I was really, really impressed with, Chance Gray and Elise Hurst. Those girls play so hard. I mean, if I'm Dana, I'm almost pulling out the, you know, the old high school trick and be like, hey, we're going to watch the girls play. And then I want you guys to tell me what you see differently between their games and our games. But I know that you've got a couple of players you want to shine a little spotlight on here too, for this women's squad.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely Grace Van Sluten, somebody that, you know, I've been preaching about, you know, all season, and, you know, her effort. And this game, she, another one where, like, if you look at the stat sheet, it was like, oh, okay, you know, an average day, but really attacking the paint well. But the player that I actually wanted to talk about the most was Elise Hurst, and the versatility that she brought to this lineup. The Ducks, you know, kind of out of necessity, going to some, more peculiar lineups where going Rogers, Gray, Hurst, Hosendove, and Taya Hansen at one point. And then the comeback that you were talking about, down 11 with 4.5 on the clock, they had Gray, Rogers, Hurst, Tahina Pau-Pau, and Hosendove at the 5. So it went completely 5 out. And then on defense, just switching the hell out of everything and doubling the block. And it just threw Washington State for a loop, and they were just able to play so fast and have so many shooters everywhere. And this any dribble penetration, they were looking for the kick out. And Elise Hurst brings that versatility with the physicality of her size, but still also has very much that guard package where Taya Hansen gives you that versatility, just definitely a little bit more of a wing. You don't want the ball in her hand as much. And Hosendove, extremely versatile as well, but I would say almost more of like a small forward, where she's like that Charles Barkley-esque kind of like role. I love what she's able to bring to the offense with her screen ability, her pass ability.
The passing game. Yes, absolutely. And I just want to, Elise, this is kind of like a water polo terminology, but Elise Hurst plays with sharp elbows. Mm-hmm. She looks like she's got some sharp elbows while she's out there playing.
Yeah. Taya Hansen has a little bit of that too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think both those players kind of set that tone for that offense, especially because, I mean, when you look at this team, the one thing you can kind of do with some of these players is push them around. Filipina is probably why we saw a little bit more of that lineup. But even with her, it's she's improving so much, and I love it. Every week that I watch Filipina Shea play, she improves. And we know that she hasn't really been playing basketball that long, but sometimes you can see her kind of going up for rebounds and kind of reaching, and players are able to get underneath her and kind of push her around. And when she figures out that when she lowers that center of gravity, she's actually going to be able to kind of toss people around. And Folly Dante is actually just learned season. So when they kind of figure that out and they can bring a little bit more of that physicality, we won't need Taya Hansen and Elise Hirsch to go in there and set that tone. But right now they are the tone setters and they do a great job at it.
Well, and hopefully Filipina is feeling all right. I know she took a tough shot to the head and wasn't able to finish that game. So hopefully she's able to bounce back. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about
too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Pac-12 refs were Pac-12 reffing pretty hard during this game. And I mean, the Oregon timekeeper has the Oregon timekeeper has to take some responsibility, because it did look like a timekeeper error as opposed to a referee error. But you got to let that play out if you're the ref. I mean, you're the ref here on this podcast. In that kind of a situation, when you do have a clock stoppage, when time is ticking away on the clock, what are you told to do in that kind of a scenario? Like, as a referee, what are your rules kind of in that moment?
I think that they made the right call in what they did. I think when you see the clock, you're supposed to whistle the play dead.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Okay. Educate me, please.
But in the same time, it's like, man, did it really affect the play that much? It was just so unfortunate. It was one of those things that everybody wants to blame the ref. They want to blame the time clock. You want to just, you know, blame anybody under the sun. But it was just a Webster definition clusterfuck.
That's a great way to put it. The look on Hirsch's face when she makes that and then looks over her shoulder and sees the ref with his hand up, you know, stopping it. She just melts, and it's as a shooter too, to be able to make that kind of a game winning shot. And then for them to have another shot at the game winner and Pow Pow to come up just short when she's obviously bodied to the floor. I know as a ref, it's hard to call two fouls as time is expiring for the same team. So some of that human element, you know, comes into play a little bit there, but you got to put her on the line in that situation. She earned that foul. She created the contact and then fell. And then she almost made it anyway. It was an incredible play.
Yeah. And I mean, not to give the refs too much credit, because they botched many a call, but before that, that potential buzzer beater there. But at the same time, you know, like, although I think that is the letter of the law to whistle RF, I'm like, I'm seeing how this goes, and then we'll hit the replay booth if it goes in.
Exactly. We'll come back to it. Well, again, this team's playing really well right now. I believe still ranked in the top, their top 22 team, 23,
somewhere around there, I think. Yeah, they stayed in the top 25. I do know that.
Yep. Another opportunity to get better on Friday with a Platypus Cup game in Corvallis at 8 p.m. Always a great game between these two teams. And you got to give it up for Corvallis. For women's basketball games, that place is rocking. It's a pretty fun environment. So if anybody does want to make that trip up there and go root on your Ducks Friday at 8 p.m. Do you think the Ducks win that game? What's your prediction on that one?
I think it's going to be a tight one. I think Oregon does pull it out, just because what Kelly Graves was able to do with the players that he had in that last game and some of those matchups, I think that they've kind of unlocked something with some of those small ball lineups. And I think that they're not as focused on just driving the ball into the paint. I think that they have figured out a little bit more versatility within their offense with some of these players. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, if Filipina Shea plays. But the Beavers they're frisky, and they're a team that's not on a lot of national radar, but they're going to make some noise in the Pac-12. And it's already setting up to be a pretty cannibalistic conference play as it is outside of, well, even Stanford going down the other day.
Yeah. Is so freaking good, man. Oh my gosh.
The Brink Jones combo, and then just all the other pieces that they're able to allow them. Like, how those two are able to play off each other with the super versatility with those bigs is, they're scary. I still think South Carolina's head and shoulders the best team, but.
I did want to touch on real quick. We haven't talked a lot about women basketball recruiting so much, but the Ducks do have a pretty good class coming in next year.
Oh, yeah.
A couple wings and a forward, and then they have officially offered Oh, crap. I had her. Oh, there she is. 2024 South Carolina player Joyce Edwards, who is the number one recruit in that class. And they seem to be a favorite to be able to land her also. So Kelly Graves out there doing exactly what he should be doing, crushing it. And I would also be remiss if I did not mention that good old Jackson Shellstad's West Lynn. Oh, what are they, the Pioneers? Wow, that's actually a mascot that I don't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember either. I know they're green.
Yeah, West Lynn is now the number one high school basketball team in the country, according to USAtoday.com. So good for them.
Give Jackson Shellstad that fifth star.
Seriously, get him his fifth star. All right, Shane, anything else on the round ball here before we move into last take?
Oh, man. No, I just think that both these teams are in a pretty good place right now. I think that as bad as the men's season has kind of gone so far, like I said, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think they're figuring some stuff out. And like I was texting with you, I think it was yesterday, I kind of felt better about that women's basketball loss against Washington State than I did about the men's win against Arizona, where I feel like they kind of caught that Arizona team on just like a bad day. I mean, they played well early, but, you know, Oregon was just hitting everything. Biddle hit that 1-3 that like just stuck on the back of the rim for a second, fell in, and just felt like a lot was just breaking their way. Although I do think that they needed a game like that. I feel like they've had a lot of games where a lot of just everything didn't go their way. But the way that the Oregon women's team is able to kind of see the adversity at this point in the season, I think it's a great point where, you know, they hit their win streak early. Now they're getting kind of punched in the mouth. They're getting that injury, you know, the bug's kind of going around. But now they can kind of rally around, figure some stuff out. And I think that these small lineups and some of these more creative things that Kelly Graves has been able to do over the past week is going to benefit that team in the long run. And I just like they have more of a cohesion than the men's team do right now. But like I said, the men's team has enough talent where I think they can put 5-6 wins together. And I think that could get them into the tournament.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. All right, let's jump on to last take here. We are at the end of the podcast. No more Duck Generate Corner. That'll come back in the fall once again. But last take, Shane. Last take. What do you got for us today, man?
So my last take is actually going to be a question for you. It's going to be kind of like a hybrid of three questions / last take.
Ooh, okay, all right.
It was something I was kind of thinking about when I was going over like the pro Duck NFL stuff for the postseason. Mm. I'm going to call it a two-part question. If you could have any pro Duck and put them on your favorite team right now, who would it be? And part two, or, you know, the other half of it, is who would you give the pro Duck regular season MVP award to? Who had the best regular season? Because I feel like one of them, I feel like is going to be Justin Herbert. And the other one, I don't know if you would answer it the same. Obviously, you're a Seahawk fan. You need a quarterback. Herbert makes a lot of sense.
Herbert makes a ton of sense. I'm going to pivot, though, a little bit. And I want Javon Holland on the Seahawks.
Wow.
I think that would be so fun to root for. And he's the kind of safety that they need, that ball hawking type of safety that can also, you know, play well in coverage. I love Herbert, and but I also kind of like having him on my AFC team. Like, I've kind of adopted the Chargers, sadly, as like my AFC team that I kind of root for now that he's playing there. So I would rather see good things happen to him in LA than bring him to the misery that is Seattle, because I want to see him succeed, you know, down there in those beautiful blue uniforms and whatnot. But yeah, I think Javon Holland on that Seahawks team would be a lot of fun. That would be really, really fun to watch. And I do think the regular season goes to Herbert. I think, I talked about it a little bit on some other podcasts or some previous podcasts, but
kind of had a shaky start to the year.
Had a real shaky, but injuries, man. And it was playing through those injuries, showing that toughness, and still being one of the premier quarterbacks in the league. I mean, I think if you polled the NFL GMs right now, I think Herbert still would be considered to have a top 7 season from a quarterback in the NFL. I don't think he would fall any lower than that. And as well as Armstead played, as well as DeForest Buckner's played, as well as some of these other Ducks have played, I think Herbert still wins that regular season crown.
I was thinking I'd give the MVP award to Penei Sewell.
I like that too.
Yeah, but just the turnaround of the Lions. I mean, I know it wasn't just him, but I also watched a lot of Jared Goff, being a Rams fan. And I know that he is surgical when he has a good offensive line, and he is a doofus when he doesn't. So Penei Sewell deserves any credit that Jared Goff gets on the season, being that right tackle. And then what he was able to get out and do even late in the year, you know, with that reception for that third down, that play against the Packers where he absolutely depleted homeboy. And I think that he really showed out for that turnaround for the Lions. But if I was going to take any player, I would take Herbert. I think he's like a younger, better Stafford. So just like prolonging, just be like, hey, Stafford, thanks for the Super Bowl, man.
Have a good one. Boy, KT would be fun in the Seahawks uniform too. And just getting a Seahawks number 5 jersey. But I'm changing my answer. I want the Seahawks to draft the Wolverine. And if they do so, ooh, I will immediately buy a Noah Sewell Seahawks uniform, a jersey there. All right, for my last take, we're going to jump back over onto the hardwood. And this is one I've said before, and I can't get off this, and this is probably going to make Shane mad. Trailblazers, what the hell are we doing?
Oh.
Fire Chauncey Billups.
I'm cool. I'm good with it now. I thought you were going to say something pro Bill Walton for a second. I'm like, oh
no. I still love Bill Walton. That's a whole nother.
But no, let's just forget I said just anything. Please, just go back to Chauncey
Billups. He is so bad. I actually tried watching some Blazer games just because I couldn't resist. I wanted to watch Simons. I wanted to watch Sharp. I love watching Dame play basketball. I can't do it, Shane. I get too mad. I threw something at my TV the other night watching a Blazers game. Miga looked at me like, what the fuck was that? Yeah. Not only is he a terrible person, he's a terrible basketball coach. And I hate being the guy saying this grown man needs to lose his job, you know, especially as someone that has participated in the coaching profession, but he's terrible. He's absolutely terrible. Fire Chauncey Billups and it can't happen soon enough. And you know who I think they should hire?
Terry Stotts.
Mike D'Antoni.
Ooh. Yeah, I'd almost go like, I'm first of all, I'm with you. I'm out on Chauncey. The issues went on for long enough. And I think that the lack of adjustments made is very like Cristobal-esque. Let's just sneak one of those.
Good comparison, actually. Yeah. Good comparison.
But yeah, it's just hard. Cause it's like, okay, we know this team isn't like set up to be a great defensive team. And now people are talking about like trading Anthony Simons for like OG Anunoby. I'm like, oh my God, like,
please no.
Can that please not be for my viewing? Like, I just don't want to watch that. But yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I don't know if it's like Nurk that needs to move or what. But I like some of the guys on the team. Like I like Wofford. I talked about Eubanks earlier. Like some of these guys that aren't getting the run as much. I thought Gary Payton Jr. coming back was going to have a little bit more of an impact on the defense. It didn't. Yeah.
I got a trade for you. Josh Hart for Kyle Kuzma.
Well, I don't think the Wizards do that.
Of course they'd say no. We'd have to throw in like a second or some. We'd have to throw in some pieces. I love Josh Hart. He's actually really fun to watch play basketball and his internet persona and just everything about him. But he's just another superfluous guard on this roster right now.
It's just,
if you could bring in a big wing, I think that'd be a game changer.
It's just weird that we have to trade like the only guy who rebounds and plays defense. Like, and then it's like, what are the issues? Well, we don't rebound and play defense. And it's like, all right, well, we should probably trade Josh Hart.
But who else do you trade?
That's the thing, dude, is I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And like, nobody's stock is like really high. Like, so people are like, oh, well, like trade Shaden Sharpe. I'm like, no. Don't do that. Don't trade Sharpe. Don't trade Ant. You don't trade Dame because he's the franchise's best player. And it's just, you're never going to get the return for it.
Nope. Never going to.
Anybody else though? Fuck it, dude. Whatever. I love Nurk. I love Jeremy Grant. I love all these guys, but like, I don't know. I don't love watching a 500 team get like 10th in the West every year.
No, I don't think they're going to move Grant. I think, again, leaning into that whole small market Portland thing, being a local kid, being a family kid, I don't think he's going anywhere. But I mean, unless you're trading Shaden in some type of massive deal to the Nets because Kyrie went crazy again and you can actually get a chance to get KD or something. That's the only deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only deal that I want to even hear Shaden Sharpe's name
being
mentioned.
If we're getting KD, you trade anybody.
Yeah, like, you trade everybody really and anybody. But that's the only, I mean, people are mentioning like Sharpe for like DeAndre Ayton and kinds of like weird deals. That's terrible. Absolutely terrible. That's ridiculous. All right.
I'd rather be bad for 2 years than.
I'm so glad you joined my island. I'm so glad to have some company on the island.
Well,
let's have a drink.
But you weren't watching in the start of the year when they went like 9-1 and it was like, oh, this shit's working. Yeah. And it was like the way Chauncey was like calm and like talking to Dame and stuff. It was like, oh, this works so well. And now they like lose 6 games and he's all calm and just shooting the shit with Dame. And you're like, do something.
He's the clapper, man. He's like the Jason Garrett of the Blazers right now. All right. Well, I think the stream thing went pretty well. We'll try it again. Hopefully we won't have the lagging issues and whatnot.
It's not lagging anymore now that we're done.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's doing great now. It's always that middle. It's always that middle section, Shane, the part that's the hardest to edit, of course, also. As always, we appreciate you. Or excuse me, I messed up, man. Live and I messed it up too, man. Take care of your chicken. Take care of your mentals. We appreciate you. We love you. We out.
Peace.
All right, man. Good stuff. I'll chop this up, get it all edited, and probably get it by tomorrow. I got some shit I gotta do tonight, but hopefully tomorrow.
Sorry.
A little bit softer now. A little bit softer now.